Mike Live. So, again, that's an early evening show. And JQ tomorrow with Ray Sasaki. Well, it's time for me to go. It's a little bit past the top of the hour, 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. And again, Gareth Porter and Iran tomorrow. Let's see what else I can pull together. Again, Law and Disorder Radio is where you can go if you really want, if you want to hear what they really, if you can, can't believe what they really said. All right, kicking it off.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM in Central Illinois and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. And anyway, we've got a couple of special guests here today, and we're going to start the show off with a little music, and then we're going to get right into it. A little James McMurtry here, Can't Make It Here Anymore.
This a Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line, a flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack, just busted concrete and rusted tracks. Empty storefronts around the square, there's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore.
Okay, this hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call 217-328-2295. And the Illinois Labor Hour is also supported in part by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And programming on Labor Hour is also supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to affect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And programming on the Labor Hour is supported in part by Decatur attorney Bill Favor, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Favor proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the Graduate Employees Organization Union, the GEO at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WFT Community Radio. Okay, we're going to have a little bit of an interesting show today. We've got a caller calling in from Chicago, Will Gazzardi, who ran for state rep up in the Logan Park area of Chicago. And like our candidate down here, Carol Ammons, who also ran for state rep, was running against Mike Madigan backed candidate and actually beat the odds. I mean, heavily outspent like Carol Ammons, he still squeaked out a victory, and he's going to be calling in and talk a little bit about his campaign and what he's looking forward to, and a lot of the issues that he ran on that sort of differentiated him from the Madigan backed candidate. We also have a couple of IBEW members here at the Labor Hour today. We have a special guest from Chicago, Hale Landis. Hale, welcome to the World Labor Hour.
Thank you, David.
And what's your local up in Chicago?
I'm with Local 134, which covers Cook County.
Okay. And how long have you been a member of 134?
A very long time. But, longer than some, not as long as others. Probably about 27 years now.
Oh, okay. All right. And how's work up in Chicago these days?
Not very good, although we're cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
We have some big projects. My BA, where I work, in his turf, he just recently, along with Sheet Metal Workers local down there, BA, got a PLA signed.
Okay.
On a big project in Arlington Heights. That's $100 million labor dollars.
Oh, wow.
Over the next 5 to 10 years, so that's promising. There's work coming up at O'Hare Airport. Of course, O'Hare, is a big driver of the economy mm-hmm. around there. There's a warehouse project. There's a parking structure coming in at O'Hare. They're supposed to break ground in the next couple months on that. And there's always some other work going on, small. We're expecting along the lines of 39 tower cranes downtown this year.
Oh, wow.
Judging by the permits that have already been, or the permit applications that have been put in, or the permits that have been granted.
Okay. All right, then. And we also have another IBEW member, Nick Koch, who's a local IBEW member. He's going to be coming into the show here a little bit later on, and he's going to do a reading about the Ludlow Massacre that happened out in Colorado about 100 years ago. And so we're going to look forward to that. Going to have a few news stories here. First, on May 14, 2014, the Sangamon County Circuit Court issued a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction delaying implementation of Public Act 980599, the pension so-called Pension Reform Act. In its order, the court found that plaintiffs, in other words, pension members of various of the state of Illinois and public school districts established a fair question, quote-unquote, quote, that they will succeed on the merits as to their challenge that the so-called Pension Reform Act violates the Pension Protection Clause of the Illinois Constitution. The court order states that the act in its entirety and prohibits implementation of or administration of any provision of the act until further order of the court or until the act is held unconstitutional and a permanent injunction is entered. And, you know, what's really interesting is that in relation to this, I guess a couple days ago, Lisa Madigan, the Illinois Attorney General and daughter of Illinois Democratic Party boss Michael Madigan, went before judge and responded to this injunction, this what they call a pension theft lawsuit, and the state filed its response to five lawsuits filed by retired teachers, state workers, university employees, and public employee unions seeking to have last year's pension so-called reform law declared unconstitutional. And the lawsuits argued that the law violates the Pension Protection of the Constitution. Well, anyway, in its response, the state said that in light of the magnitude of the pension problem and all other efforts the state has made to date, the law represents a valid exercise of the state's reserved sovereign powers to modify contractual rights and obligation. This is also known as the state's police powers. And this is unbelievable. And, you know, it's interesting because this guy, Glenn Brown, addresses the issue of the state's police and emergency powers on his blog by stating that emergency does not create power. Emergency does not increase granted power or remove or diminish the restrictions imposed upon power granted or reserved. The Constitution was adopted in a period of grave emergency. It grants of power to the federal government, and its limitations of the power of the states were determined in the light of emergency, and they are not altered by emergencies. In other words, Lisa Madigan's trying to stop this injunction against ripping off this whole pension theft of state employees by trying to claim police powers, emergency police powers. I mean, it's just unbelievable that this has happened. But that's sort of the latest here in the saga, the attempts by corporate interests to steal pensions of state workers, not just in Illinois, but around the country. Also, on Thursday, there was a fast food worker struck in 150 U.S. cities, and solidarity protests sprang up in 30 other countries. And fast food strikes began way back on November 29, 2012, with workers at a Manhattan McDonald's. And a few months later, a larger group of New York City fast food workers walked out. Then low-wage workers in Chicago got in on the act 2 weeks later. Last May, the strikes jumped to Detroit, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Washington, D.C., and Seattle. By late summer, that trickle had become a torrent, with strikes in about 60 cities in August that expanded the campaign to new regions of the country. Then in December, 100 cities saw fast food walkouts and strikes by other low-wage workers. August strikes were the biggest fast food workers' actions on record until December's happened. Now, about 18 months since the campaign began, workers will break their own record once again. While opposition to the minimum wage continues on the federal level, the fast food workers' effort has shifted the political playing field and revealed cracks in both the business community's resistance to raising workers' pay and in the whole neoliberal conservative political movement's opposition to higher wage mandates. Workers have even dragged President Obama along in the wake. The White House hasn't joined workers in demanding $15 an hour, but it has raised its target minimum wage level from $9 an hour to $10.10 an hour over the course of the campaign. However, most people out there say that $10.10 is definitely not enough, and that's why they're demanding $15 an hour now. So here in local news, in Urbana, Illinois, non-tenured faculty members at the University of Illinois' flagship campus in Urbana-Champaign have filed a petition with the state saying they want to unionize. Union supporters at the Urbana-Champaign campus say they filed notice Wednesday with the Illinois Education Labor Relations Board. The board oversees collective bargaining involving universities and other schools. The board is expected to hold a hearing on the petition within several weeks. The News Gazette reports that union organizers say they collected signatures from a majority of the more than 400 instructors on the U of I Urbana-Champaign campus who lack the tenure and job security of professors. Brian Doliner is a visiting lecturer and an unionization proponent. He says union supporters would like better pay and multi-year contracts. University spokeswoman Robin Kaler declined comment because the school, quote, hasn't seen the petition. So anyway, those are some of the stories here. And we're going to take another quick music break here, and we're going to be right back with some more interesting conversation about various labor issues. And then at half past the hour, Will Gazzardi from Logan Park in Chicago will be calling in. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign. Stay tuned. Okay, that was Walter Trout. They call us working class, but we're not working anymore. Okay, some public service announcements. There'll be a film screening of the film Miner Shot Down at Chenny Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon in Urbana, and that'll be on Monday, May 19th, this coming Monday from 6 to 9 p.m. In August 2012, South African police killed 34 striking platinum mine workers in Marikana, South Africa, and claimed that they had acted in self-defense. Miner Shot Down tells a different story with compelling film footage and interviews with strike leaders and lawyers at the ensuing commission of inquiry into the massacre. What emerges is a tragedy that reveals the deep fault lines in South Africa's 20-year-old democracy of deepening inequality, violence, and unfulfilled promises of a better life for all. The film screening Miner Shot Down this Monday from 6 to 9 p.m. at Chenny Murray at the corner of Oregon and Matthews, 1209 West Oregon. This is sponsored by by Professor Ken Salo and the FAA TAF grant, Uhuru Productions, Marikana Support Committee, and the Center for African Studies. So check that out. And also tune in today at 2 o'clock and every Saturday from 2 to 3 for another sports show with host, fellow worker Neil Parthen. And that's at 104.5, our sister station in Urbana, sister community station. Also, you can catch it on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6, on Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Also, on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6, on this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 is Labor's Worldview TV. Tune in this Sunday at 4 and see footage from the April 2014 Labor Notes Conference in Chicago. And also, the Physicians for National Health program is co-hosting a national single-payer Medicare for All lobby day on Thursday, May 22nd. That's coming Thursday in Washington, D.C., along with Allies, Public Citizen, National Nurses United, Healthcare Now, and the AMSA, and others. We'll be lobbying Congress for House Resolution 676 and Senate Resolution 1782. By 2023, over 31 million Americans will remain uninsured. Underinsurance is the, quote, new normal. Millions of Americans continue to struggle for access to care while private health insurance companies thrive. Now is the time, is now to raise our collective voice and tell Congress we won't wait for single payer. Join together with advocates across the country for a legislative day of action. And if you cannot travel to Washington, D.C. on May 22nd, please call your U.S. Congressperson and state and senator and ask them to co-sponsor House Resolution 676. They're already co-sponsor. Thank them. Encourage them to list other colleagues to sign on. And your senators to co-sponsor Senate Resolution 1782. And the Capitol switchboard number is area code 202-224-3121, and an operator will connect you to your appropriate center. As far as our congressman here in central Illinois, you can call U.S. Congressman Rodney Davis at 217-403-4690. And it's going to be an interesting little event here in Washington, D.C. on the 22nd. Looks like there's going to be a lot of good speakers as well as a lot of lobbying of lawmakers. It looks like on Wednesday, the day before, May 21st, Vermont Senator, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders will lead a panel discussion on single payer in the Senate Dirksen Room 430. And again, if you can't make it to Washington, D.C., do call your congressman and encourage him to support House Resolution 676 or the Senate version 1782. So, Hale, you know, it's funny because it's a coincidence that you happen to come down this weekend for your nephew's graduation, and it happens to be the Saturday right before this National Single-Payer Lobby Day. It's interesting because I met Hale actually through the Illinois Single-Payer Coalition in Chicago. How long have you been a member of Illinois Single-Payer?
Well, I've been involved with them for probably a year and a half, 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Been officially a dues-paying member for most of that time. And just want to mention the Illinois Single-Payer Coalition is for everybody in Illinois. Mm-hmm. We do have members down here in central Illinois. We have members farther downstate. And if you're interested, Illinois Single-Payer Coalition, you can go to ilsinglepayer.org. And there's some important links on that website. Here in Illinois, a lot of people aren't aware. We do have a bill in the House, which is House Bill 942. It's virtually the same as the House resolution of John Conyers in the U.S. House, mm-hmm. H.R. 676.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pushing for single payer here on a state level. We need to push for it on a national level as well.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding the call-in day on the 22nd,
mm-hmm.
I know you gave the Capitol switchboard number. I hope everybody has that on speed dial already,
okay.
Although I'm sure not everybody does. But if also you go to our website, ilsinglepayer.org, there are links there that'll tell you who your congressperson is. Just punch in your address, zip code, and such, and mm-hmm. you'll find out if you don't already know.
Yeah, you know, that seems to be a sort of a, has been a debate for a while about what would be the best strategy to get single payer Medicare for all in the United States, whether it should be done state by state or if it should be done on a national level. And I'm agreeing, I agree with you, Hale, is the fact I think we need to push for both, because you never know where you're going to be able to break through. I mean, every poll I've seen, in recent years, show that well over three-fourths of the American people want a single-payer Medicare for all system. Yet we keep hearing from our politicians and the corporate media that it's, quote, just not politically feasible, which I always ask, well, what do you mean by that, actually? It's not politically feasible when three-quarters of the population want it. I mean, this cuts across party lines. Yeah. I mean, three-quarters of the American people, you're including not just registered Democrats and independents, you're also talking about a lot of registered Republicans.
Yeah, by some recent surveys, over 50% of Republicans are on board with a single-payer system, mm-hmm. depending on how it's explained to them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you say Obamacare, they freak out.
Yeah.
But when you say, gee, do you want your child to be covered on your policy up until age 26? Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to get rid of pre-existing condition clauses? Yeah, that's a great idea, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's all in the wording, how the questions are asked.
Yeah, that too. But, of course, this has been a big debate, too, about the whole thing with Obamacare. I mean, as we both know, Obamacare is not single payer. I mean, it's basically expanded the privatized health insurance industry, and it provided more availability for health insurance, but just because you have availability for health insurance doesn't mean you're going to get the necessary health care you need, because it's still based on whether or not you can afford the premiums. And even if you can, it doesn't mean you're going to get adequate care from a policy you can afford. Been hearing all sorts of stories about people, having high deductibles, high co-pays, and one of the big problems, especially if you get farther down in the southern part of Illinois, is that they have restrictions as far as which hospitals you can use and what doctors you can go to. So if you're living in a very remote rural area in, say, southern Illinois or even over in western Illinois, that could be a real problem.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned those restrictions. And by the way, we get those restrictions up north, too, in the major metropolitan areas. But I'm glad you mentioned those restrictions, because those restrictions are a workaround to get away from or around the fact that they cannot deny pre-existing coverage, mm-hmm. Pre-existing conditions mm-hmm. coverage. So they just say, well, we don't have a cancer doctor in our network.
Yes.
So we're not denying you coverage. We just don't have in-network doctor for you.
Yes, yes, indeed. And with the Medicare single payer, you can go, I know this pretty intimately because my wife's originally from Germany, and I've been to Germany several times and have talked to her friends and relatives. I mean, they can go to any doctor they want, any hospital they want. They have health care, 100% health coverage from the day they're born, well, actually even before, while they're still in the mother's womb, until the day they die, regardless of their employment status, whether they're unemployed, retired, or whatever. And this is what Canada has. This is what every other industrialized country has. And, of course, we hear all sorts of propaganda about how supposedly there's waiting lines. My wife's response to that is, okay, call up here in Champaign, Urbana, Carle Clinic. Call up Carle Clinic and see how long it takes you to get into an appointment. What do you call that? That's a waiting line. It's just long overdue for this country. This goes back as far, if I'm not mistaken, Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman wanted to get this passed, along with some other things. And the corporate special interests have been fighting it off all this time. And, it's long overdue. And I guess the question is just how much longer we're going to have to endure this brutal system we have, and whether or not it's going to be state by state. Because, one thing I wondered about, Hale, we know Vermont has already passed one, and they're prohibited from starting it until 2017 at the earliest because of a provision in Obamacare. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep pushing and organizing and get something set up before 2017. What I worry about is, let's say, Vermont, a few other states, including, let's say, Illinois as well, would pass something like that. That what would happen, what I could foresee happening, is that we would have healthcare refugees pouring in from Indiana, Kentucky, and, neighboring states. I mean, I don't want to. Those people deserve health care, too. I just see this being, that's kind of like one of the drawbacks of having a state-by-state single-payer Medicare for all system as opposed to a national.
Yeah, that is a huge hazard. Who knows what's going to happen if mm-hmm. that were to happen. I mean, now that you mention it, I could see, were it to pass here in Illinois, which I hope it does,
mm-hmm.
Illinois can send Indiana a bill. Illinois can send Iowa
that's a
Kentucky,
great idea.
A bill.
Yeah, that would be an excellent idea.
This is
idea.
How much we paid out for coverage of your citizens that came to our state because you wouldn't cover them.
That is, I love that idea for sure. Okay, we're going to take another quick musical break, and pretty soon here, Will Gazzardi is going to be calling in from Logan Park, Chicago, and we'll be interesting to talk with him a little bit. So that you're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Supported Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Store and a grocery too. Then a mega market opened on the edge of town. There was nothing anybody could do. Hey, everybody's working for the man again. Everybody's working for the man. Yeah, mom and pop, they had to close up shop. Everybody's working for the man. We had a radio station, they played our music the way we all liked it around here. Then a big corporation with a whole lot of money told our jockeys what we wanted to hear. Now everybody's working for the man again. Everybody's working for the man. They got everybody dancing to the same top tune. Everybody's working for the man. All the foxes in the henhouse, cows are in the corn, roosters too scared to crow.
Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
This is Will Gazzardi calling.
Hi, Will, how are you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Okay, so could you would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure, yeah. My name is Will Gazzardi. I am the Democratic nominee for state representative in the 39th District on Chicago's Northwest Side.
Okay, that's pretty much the Logan Park area?
Logan Square, Portage Park, and Belmont Cragen are three big neighborhoods.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I wanted you to call in today because your campaign was a lot, very, very similar to a campaign we had down here for state rep, Carol Ammons, in which you and Carol Ammons were basically battling the Democratic Party machine of Mike Madigan and heavily outspent, but yet you both pulled off a victory. And kind of like to just hear your kind of your general thoughts. Some of your campaign stories, and in particular, what were some of the issues that differentiated you from your opponent?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to talk about it. And I have met Carol, and she is a fantastic. I think she's going to be a terrific colleague. I'm really looking forward to working with her. And yeah, we sort of exchanged some war stories. it's no simple task, and I think we were both facing some very serious opposition, but I think in our districts, which are very different, and speaking to very different populations and coming from a very different place, we proved the same thing, which is that people in the state of Illinois are looking for a different kind of leadership than what they've got, and in particular, they're looking for leaders who are unabashed about their progressive values and who really believe that government has an important role in providing a quality public education for every child, that has an important role in making sure that the most vulnerable in our society have the protections that they deserve. And that you can get out there and talk about this stuff in a very vocal way. You don't have to be shy about it. That people really want to support candidates who have these beliefs. And I think both of our wins really sort of validate that message.
Yeah, and public schools, that issue is really big up in Chicago. I do know that there's been a huge, where did I begin? I mean, the whole charter school thing and Rahm Emanuel and the battle with the Chicago Teachers Union and Karen Lewis, and it just keeps going on and on. And I just recently saw a blog from The retired teacher, Fred Klonsky, I think his name is, about Rahm Emanuel's, one of his aides, attacking a principal up there for basically stating his opinion that it was like, that's how dare you state your opinion kind of thing.
It's been very ugly. And someone from the mayor's office called the head of the principals association a shill for the teachers union. ugly words have been exchanged on this issue for a long time, and in particular, you know, things in the past couple of years have been very contentious. And that's an issue on which my opponent and I, you were asking about some of the areas in which we differed. Mm-hmm. It's one in which we had some very clear differences, and in which I think voters really sided with me and with the policies that I was talking about. My opponent had sponsored a bill for vouchers, to spend public dollars, divert public dollars to private schools, and she was a supporter of expanding charter schools as well. And I think what people in my district, certainly, and I think people all across the city, what they really want is meaningful investment in neighborhood public schools.
Mm-hmm.
That we just closed down 50 public schools, and now we're talking about opening 50? A whole new raft of charters.
Yeah, oh, wow.
50 elementary schools in Chicago were closed at the end of last year, and it was a very painful process for a lot of people in this city. I was at a community meeting earlier this past week with a woman who was talking about the school that she, Lafayette Elementary in Humboldt Park, where she went and her dad went and her younger son was going, and they took that school away from her, and she was just in tears. She was so upset about how disrespected she had felt in the process, how she had gone in front of all these people and begged them to keep this school open, and not only have they overruled her opinion, but the way they treated her and the way they just refused to listen to her concerns was just so disheartening to this woman. And you know, it's a really painful issue in Chicago right now, and we need a voice in how schools are run. I really believe that we need an elected school board in Chicago. You might not know this, but we're the only city in Illinois where the mayor appoints the school board. So I'm sure, Champaign, you guys get out there and vote for your school board.
Yes, we do.
But we get ours appointed by the mayor, and so they have no interest in listening to public input or being accountable to the community. So
yes,
we need an elected school board.
And I understand that most of those people appointed to the Chicago school board, a lot of them are like millionaires and even billionaires, like previously Penny Pixler of Hilton or Hyatt hotel chain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, I'm willing to listen to the opinion of a millionaire or a billionaire, certainly, which is the next person. But you know, these are people who don't have children in Chicago public schools. They're people who don't have a lot of experience in Chicago public schools, haven't seen what's going on in these schools for the most part. You know, that's true of most of our board members. And at the end of the day, they know who they're accountable to and who is responsible for keeping them in that job. And it's not the people of the city. It is the mayor. And that's what they listen to.
Wow. So what were some of the other issues besides public education and charter schools?
Well, the fair tax is just a huge issue, and economic justice more broadly. But I am a really strong proponent of this fair tax legislation. I think we have one of the most regressive tax policies of any state in the country. And at a time when our state is desperate for revenue and we're cutting so deeply to the vital services that people desperately need, we got to find new sources of revenue, and it can't come from working families. You know, we have dug into the pockets of working families deeply already. So we got to find ways to make sure that the folks at the very top of the totem pole are paying their fair share. And I think the fair tax is a really great way to do that. I'm no big fan of these huge corporate tax breaks either. And my opponent had a long history of voting for those down in Springfield. So that was something that we talked about in the campaign a lot, too, that, you know, Sears and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and Caterpillar and all these guys are getting their tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in free money from the state while they're turning around and saying we can't afford to keep your mental health clinics open or to keep your public schools open or to fund public health initiatives. It seems like a very disingenuous claim. So that was another big difference in our race, for sure.
Okay, and, it's interesting. that down here with Carol Ammons and her opponent, the two, well, a couple of the big issues that differentiated them was the fact that her opponent, who's from Chicago originally, and he wanted to basically, you know, cut corporate taxes in half, which Carol adamantly opposed, wasn't shy in the least about, you know, state. And so in their first debate, their public debate, the other thing that he... also thought that $10 an hour was plenty for a minimum wage increase, where Carol was a proponent of $15 an hour. And also there's other issues like legalization of marijuana, ending the drug war, single-payer health care that really differentiated him. And what was interesting is that, you know, a lot of people in this community didn't know Carol Ammons, but, you know, it was interesting that this guy, I mean, he had so much money coming in, and he had virtually no grassroots support, that he threw all of his money into mailers, and people were getting literally sometimes two mailers a day, these big glossy
I know about
ones.
That. Yeah.
And, I mean, it really turned off a lot of people, you know? And very, very, very negative. Actual outright, I don't want to say they were outright lies, but you talk about an extreme distortion of truths in these mailers most of the time. And Carol, to her credit, I mean, I was kind of getting a little upset for a while in the campaign, because I thought she should start hitting back a little bit. But she just, you know, she took it in stride. She kept her cool, and I think it paid off for her, you know. Because, I mean, there was a vicious, vicious attack against her, you know, from this opponent, as well as the mayor of Champaign, the mayor of Urbana, and the current state rep. So, I mean, all the powers that be were coming out against her, too, locally.
Yeah, well, we were dealing with a very similar dynamic here.
Okay.
And I don't know if you had seen any of the mail that was sent out against me, but the central theme of their opposition to me, and by they I mean my opponent and her many allies, had to do with suggesting that I was soft on sexual predators, that I wanted sexual predators to be around our children and living near our parks and schools and putting our children at risk. And it was based on, very loosely based on, like half a sentence taken out of context from an article that I wrote in college when I was writing for the school newspaper. I mean, it was you talk about extreme distortion, you know. It was way out there, and they sent a lot of really sort of disturbing pieces about this issue. There's one with this little innocent girl with two sort of dark, hairy arms on her shoulders, and like Will Gazzardi wants to, you know, allow sexual predators near our children. Very disturbing stuff.
Wow, but that tops what they were doing to care. I mean, unbelievable.
It's something, but you know, I think that just evinces such a lack of faith in the voting public.
Indeed.
You know? And I think we're beyond that. I think especially in the age of the internet, where people can easily sort of fact check these kinds of things. But it also suggests that voters are easily fooled, you know? They send something scary out and they're going to vote for the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, in my experience of going door to door, I mean, geez, I was out there 40 hours a week for 7 months, nonstop, every single day. And then for 7 months, 2 years ago prior to that, running the 2012 primary, voters are much more thoughtful people than they give them credit for with that kind of mail, you know?
Yes, indeed.
People want to have a really sophisticated conversation about the issues. Even people who aren't necessarily intellectual or academic about it, people want to be talking like grown-ups, you know? And so that's what we did, and that's what Carol did, too. You know, we talked to people about increasing funding for public education. We talked to people about the need for a progressive income tax. And people understood these issues, and that's what they wanted to hear. They didn't want the same old sort of neo-tactic politics that they've gotten so used to. So.
Indeed.
I think that went a long way for us and for Carol, too, from what I can tell.
Now, there was another candidate up your way that just barely lost. Who was that person?
I'm just looking at Jake Travis.
Okay.
That was the other sort of hotly contested race around here.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay was supported by the teachers' unions as well. And that was a close race, a very hard-fought race.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay's opponent His name's Christian Mitchell, and he was a first-term rep. He's currently finishing his first term. And he and I disagree on issues around public education, on many of them, issues on which I agreed with his opponent, certainly, and that's why the teachers union supported her and supported me. But he and I also do agree on many other issues. He was the lead sponsor on the fair tax in the House, for instance.
Okay.
So that was a tough race, and there were a lot of progressive folks were really divided in that race.
I see. Okay. Okay.
You know, and Jay was a terrific candidate, and I think she has a bright political future ahead of her, and she's doing the right thing right now, which is keeping all of her volunteers engaged and making sure that they're continuing to work on the issues. This is exactly what I did 2 years ago when, you know, I ran in the 2012 primary in the same district, and we got 49.5% of the vote.
Wow.
And, yeah, we lost by 125 votes in that race out of 8,000 cast. And so yeah, you know, the next day we got our volunteers together and said, hey, how can we keep working? And and that's exactly what Jay's doing, so I think she's doing the right things down there.
Good. So what would you like to do? Of course, it's pretty much a sure thing you're going to get elected since you're in Chicago. You know, you don't have much of a worry about a Republican beating you. Down here, it's pretty certain for Carol, but we don't want to let our guard down because,
right.
You know, the Republican State Republican Party saw how divisive it was down here, and they might be kind of thinking that this might be a good chance to throw a bunch of money. So we're not going to let our guard down. But however, I want to ask you, when you finally go to the State House in Springfield, have you thought about some maybe what you would like to start doing as soon as you get there?
Yeah, I think there's some long-term policy goals that I have. We talked about the fair tax a bunch of times now, but I think that's not going to happen right away. That's going to take several sort of rounds of effort. You know, we just had one this cycle and got some good supporters out there for it, but obviously it fell a little short. But I think that's something I'd certainly like to get down there and start pushing on. But there's some short-term stuff, too, on economic issues, for instance. I think there was a bill in the House last session, 3627, that was about corporate tax transparency. You know, right now they say that two out of every three corporations doing business in Illinois pay nothing in state income tax, zero. And that's a huge problem when a state, as I was saying before, when your state is short of revenues, to let two out of three corporations not pay taxes is a problem. So, and the other part of the problem is we don't know who pays what because we don't have mandated transparency on that issue. So that's the first step, is to pass a bill that's going to require corporations doing business in Illinois to disclose how much they pay in state income tax. And then we can figure out, well, who's not paying and why and how are they getting out of it and start closing some of those loopholes and really generating the revenue that we need. So that's, I think, a short-term achievable goal. I really believe in, as I said before, this elected school board issue, and oddly enough, it's an issue that has to come through Springfield. You'd think because it's Chicago's school board, it's a Chicago issue, but it's actually a state legislative issue. And I hope that we can convince some downstate folks and some suburban folks that, listen, you guys all have elected school boards, and many members of the legislature, including Carol, have served on elected school boards. And it's a great way to engage people in the democratic process and to make sure that public schools are held accountable to the public. And so I hope we can build a pretty broad-based coalition on that as well.
Okay.
And then, I'm sorry, forgive me for rambling here, but...
That's okay.
There's a lot I want to do.
One of my co-hosts would like to ask you a question. In fact, he's down from Chicago. He's a member of IBEW, Electricians Union, Local 134.
Oh,
he's
great.
Down for his nephew's graduation here at the... graduating from the University of Illinois. Hale?
Yeah. Hi, how you doing, Will?
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I don't know if you heard the beginning part of the show, but David and I were talking about single-payer healthcare, health insurance system here in Illinois. And as I'm sure you know, we do have a bill in Illinois, House Bill 942. And when you're elected, I'm just wondering if you would be a co-sponsor of that bill?
Absolutely, yeah. I think single-payer is it's sort of the end of the arc that we're on right now, because I think that we're going to find that the Affordable Care Act is going to be a step forward, but it's not going to be a truly sustainable long-term solution.
You're cutting out, Will.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me adjust things here. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. I was just saying, I think that the Affordable Care Act will probably prove to have long-term challenges, that it's not going to be a sustainable solution in the long run. And maybe I'll be proven wrong here by time, I don't know. But from what I've read and from the policy that I've studied, it seems likely anyway that it's not going to prove sustainable and that we're going to need to take another look at how we deal with healthcare. And I think there are two options. One is going back into a more free market-driven system. And one is really, the other option is really to truly finish the process that we started here and to make sure that everybody is guaranteed access to quality, affordable healthcare. And the only way, in my opinion, to do that is to take these corporate guys out of the game and to make it a public right like it should be.
Okay. Well, you and Carol definitely agree on that as well. Nick, yeah. Did you want to ask, I guess?
No, I'm busy enjoying the ideas.
Okay.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Yes. So anyway, okay, well, our time's just about up here, and just any last words you'd like to let our listeners hear?
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'll say is that I know that there's often there's a sort of division people talk about between Chicago and downstate, you mm-hmm. know, and that's something that I'd really like to work on getting past. You know,
oh, yeah.
That there's so much that we can find common ground on, especially with great progressive folks like Carol. But really, you know, I think with people of all stripes, there's a lot of basic issues that we probably agree on more than we think we do. So I look forward to spending some time in Champaign and in the Quad Cities and in Peoria and all over the state. You know, I represent a portion of Chicago, but I'm making laws for all of Illinois. So I look forward to working with you guys and to hopefully paying you guys a visit in person sometime before too long and getting on the show in the studio.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what a lot of us say down here. Thank God for Chicago. Otherwise, we'd be Indiana. So,
well put. All right.
Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Okay, take care.
All right, have a good one.
That has no clue. Inside fighting between the red and the blue. Political corruption, sex scandals out of control. The people are tired and can't wage and cast their votes. The people want to change. Tired of the same old thing. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. Country going through recession, jobs are on the line. Kids can't afford college, the bills are so far behind. Chief's got a headlock on us, gas is on the rise. Can't afford to use my dollar. It's like the people want to change. Tired of the same old thing. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. Put your hands together! To be rented, bury me like a mummy when I die. the people wanna change. Tired of the same old thing. They can't wait for the cold to open say, down with the status quo. Immigration, hate crimes and discrimination.
People wanna change.
Global warming, genocide, defaulting, very alarming.
People wanna change.
Illegal occupation of a nation by a failed administration.
People wanna change.
Economic crisis, crooked lending devices.
People wanna change.
Tax cuts for the rich, make that a bitch democratic. I'd rather fight this with
change.
People wanna change. Tired of the single day. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. The people wanna change. The people wanna change.
Okay, that was John Lee Hooker Jr., People Want to Change, and I just had to play that song since Will Guzzardi was on because that was kind of Carol Ammon's sort of one of her theme songs when she ran. And I think it's very, very true. People are getting really fed up with, you know, corporate money and politics, and they seem like not having a choice a lot of times. Excuse me. So anyway, I got two IBEW guys here, Hale from Chicago and Nick from Champaign, and they're going to talk a little about some IBEW issues here while I regain my voice here.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
I'm with IBEW Local 601 here in Champaign, and you are?
I'm with 134 in Chicago, Cook County. Cook County is our jurisdiction, the county lines.
We have a jurisdiction down here that extends rather interestingly. It's not gerrymandered, but it encompasses one nuclear power plant that was in the installation of the 17 owned by Commonwealth Edison that is now all totally owned as power distribution by Exelon Corporation. And that extends clear up to Streeter, Illinois, and including Pontiac. And going as far south as, we'll say, just the east side of Tuscola at the Illinois Central train tracks. So it's a rather large area, but by the same token, it has a wide variety of different industrial applications here in the heartland.
Yeah, now, during the music interlude, you and I were talking a little bit about informational pickets and how active your local is, my local is, the building trades councils in our respective regions are. And so I was just wondering, can you tell the listeners a little bit about anything that's going on down here or what we could do down here to get more involved?
I'm not really sure because I will have to say it's been a while since I have walked picket. And sure, that cuts into a work day. Employers understand that as a member of an organization whose sole purpose is to protect and promote darn good construction practices, best practices, from a safety perspective, from the efficiency and the quality of what we do for a living with the IBEW, and that's a whole lot, folks, from communications and telephone data all the way to industrial and power distribution facilities. Local 601, they don't necessarily do lineman work, but we sure know how to build things like substations, and we know how to build many types of multi-residential facilities and scientific laboratories throughout the University of Illinois campus.
And you do a lot of residential work, too. I mean, there's a couple of residential contractors here,
We've been working very hard to try and expand the quality of residential work by our residential wiremen with the IBEW. We're trying to show a greater emphasis in providing that quality through such programs as Plus Five Contracting, which means I don't know if we are still engaged in that, but I would have no doubt that if you hire a union residential wireman to go ahead and build your new home, the Plus 5 program for people who would sign on to that, you want nothing but the best to put the wiring out there for your hot tub and for your home theater. When it's all over and done, we will go ahead and guarantee the quality of the installation for 5 years after the contractor walks away and the certificate of occupancy is issued.
That's quite unusual in the home building profession, have a five-year guarantee on the work.
Well, I have watched randomly the first and second year apprentices that are on the residential wiring program, as well as the journeyman wiremen that go through a five-year training process. And just so there's no confusion, if you may have to pay a little bit more money